Central Valley. It's time for the 940 ESPN Rye Show. The 940 ESPN Rye Show is brought to you by Bowman & Associates, Fashion Furniture, Van Buren Insurance, and Firehouse Subs. And now, here are your hosts, Nick Papagni and Matt Johnson.
Welcome to the Rise. Good afternoon, everyone. We're live here at Fashion Furniture, the one and only. Looks like they're doing a little remodeling. They never stay stagnant at this place. It's constantly moving and redeveloping the look and the feel of this great, great furniture store, number one in the valley. They give the local. I want to thank Firehouse Subs, one of our great sponsors, just brought in the sandwiches. If you're out and about and you're wondering what you can do next, come on out to Fashion Furniture and enjoy a little lunch on us and enjoy the show. This is going to be a little different right now because Nick Papagni, the Pag Meter, my co-host, is on location. It's high school basketball tournament season. He's traveling around the valley, actually going to go to other parts of this great state and start reporting back to me, and hopefully he can call in and tell us all the action out there in the world of basketball. But I'm happy because every now and again, it's almost like, you know, the old school for you older guys, the Johnny Carson sometimes would bring in his the new host of the show while he was on vacation. And we've had a great experience with this young man talking sports and football and, more importantly, the psychology of growing up in this valley. And, of course, that's the legendary head football coach of the Bullard Knights. Don Arax is here next to me. Welcome, Don.
I'm kind of like Don Rickles, huh? Regular guest, huh?
Well, Rickles wouldn't get the chair. I'm talking about who was the first official to take Johnny's seat. I know that Joan Rivers
was, I think, the first.
Was the first.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's kind of what I'm referring to.
Great, probably the greatest female comedian of all time, I would say, Joan Rivers.
I'd put her definitely right up there.
She's right up there. Yeah, stand up.
Yeah, I think she was pretty much revolutionary in her caustic behavior towards people in life and experience.
She would never get away in this PC culture. She would never. That's why I wish she were still around. Now, this is why it's great coming on, because we talk about stuff that has nothing to do with high school football.
Well, in reality, it does, because the state championship picture of football, which we'll talk about today, along with we'll be introducing a little change of pace. We're talking a little Fresno State basketball. We had a great time last night. We'll talk about that. We'll talk a little bit about the playoff picture that just took place here in the state of California for football, get some experiences. And we're going to enter into the mix here probably after the next segment, Yosef Ferris, who's the great coach, turned the Madera Coyotes into something that was really relevant again in the world of football. He's made a move. We'll talk about that with Coach Arax and Coach Ferris. And then we'll hopefully have Nick Anderson come in after 1 o'clock. That's pretty much the lineup for the show. But I'd like to just ask Coach Arax this. You know, as we segue into, as you said, you know, PC and political, but more important, family values and what's happening in the world that we live in today. On the way to the game last night, we went out and watched Fresno State put a whooping on Cal Berkeley in basketball, and you were there, and along with a lot of us other high school football coaches, we had an opportunity not only to watch the Bulldogs, but on the drive to the game, I bumped into, as leaving my driveway, a neighbor of mine said, "Yeah, you're going to the game. Yeah, you know, I'd like to go to more games, but you know, those games that are on Tuesday, Wednesday on school nights, my kids, no way, no how am I going to let them out on a school night to go see an evening game at basketball for the Bulldogs." And I thought, yeah, I got you. And as I'm driving to the Save Mart Center, I got to thinking, you know, my great memories of a young guy growing up was my dad coming home from work after a hard day, and we're back home from a hard day at school and whatever sport we were involved in, and he'd come in and announce to the family, "Guys, a little different tonight. Got good tickets to the Phoenix Suns. We're going to go see the Suns tonight."
Right.
There was no talk of it's a school night. He knew we'd get back by 9 or 10. And that was unbelievable, Coach. That was pretty much one of my great experiences as a young adult. Kind of getting a little change of pace, like, yes, my dad's taking us to a ball game tonight. And when I heard that, kind of thinking, wait a minute now. It's a 7 o'clock ball game. My neighbor's thinking that's too late. The game, we were out by 9 o'clock. We stayed later, got home by 9:30.
Right.
But I don't understand.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I grew up in a family. We owned a nightclub. So, I mean, when I was real little, before my dad died, he might come home and say, "We're going to eat breakfast late."
Yeah.
You know, it's just a bizarre thing. Or let's go here. And then, you know, my mom was a late to bed, late rise person. So, yeah, staying up late. I mean, I don't know. My kid's up till 10. He's in the fourth grade, and he goes to bed about 10:15. I mean, I want to spend time with my kids, so I'm not like, we're getting home late as coaches, you know, all three of us, and So I don't want my kid in bed at 7. That's bizarre to me. That seems like a cop out there on the timing of.
Well, to relate that to football and to, I don't want to use the term, you know, the softening of our society today and what kids are, you know, strapped with, the goods and the bads. I'm more in tune to increasing the population of fans at Fresno State games.
Right.
And if there is a population base that thinks that because basketball starts at 7 o'clock, tip off was 7:06 last night, that taking the family out or the youngsters that are in elementary school to junior high out for a basketball game, if we're taking that away, that could be removing a huge population base that could be attending those games. I personally, as you would agree, I can't get into who raises kids a certain way. If it's 7:30 or 8 o'clock's your bedtime for your little ones, great, so be it. But I think that this idea that we can't ever go out and explore a little bit past the general time clock of our evening hours with your little ones with you, what do you think?
I noted a couple things at that game last night. This has been a problem for quite a while. There are very few students there. Even in the heyday of Fresno State basketball, they had issues. There were not a lot of fathers with sons, at least that I saw.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't that was missing. And it used to be in the old days, you know. I think, Yosef, didn't you used to go to the games with your dad? And that was just the way it was. Or in my case, you know, we'd go see Fresno State one week and Fresno City the next week in the old days at Ratcliffe Stadium. But how delicate are our kids? And so I'm reading a book right now that Yosef's also reading at the same time. I'm about 30 pages from being complete, and I don't know that it completely connects with what we're talking about, but the book's called The Coddling of the American Mind, and it talks about, and, you know, I'm a Democrat. We've had this discussion before, so this isn't coming from some right winger here. What we're doing to our kids is just crazy. This, you know, they're not playing outside. You know, teen depression and suicide has spiked dramatically among generation. What is it? Z? Is that what we're calling it? I think it's
we went past Gen Y
or Gen I or something. And so a lot of it is kids aren't exploring. Kids aren't out communicating with other people. They don't have conflict resolution. Maybe we're going a little bit far off to make a connection between those issues and kids not going to a Fresno State basketball game, but, you know, they're not delicate little flowers. Let them experience some of those things. And they definitely need their sleep, but I don't think one night a week going to a Fresno State basketball game is going to hurt that. That was a pathetic crowd.
Well, last night.
Really
fill,
was.
Fill the listeners in. We're visiting right now with Coach Don Arex, Bullard Knights football coach. Talk a little bit about our experience last night, but more importantly, as we start to piece together like we have always have done in the past, you know, solutions to what is going on. There's certainly a different dynamic out there in the world of high school athletics. We see that. It's been a progression of, you know, what's necessarily safe for the student athlete, not just on the playing field, but how do we coach them, how do we treat them, and all that. But then you see the pathetic turnout for a great game, a Pac-12 opponent, the only one we have on the year coming into Save Mart Center. Our Bulldogs showed well without Taylor. Deshaun Taylor?
Right.
Did not play the game.
Right.
And they took care of business, and they're playing great basketball. I'm in love with this new head basketball coach. But there was not that electric crowd. When I have to see the basketball player on the court raising the arms, trying to get the crowd involved in the game, they're making a comeback because it didn't start out well, I got to thinking, how do we change this? And everyone's been talking about it, but maybe it is this softening or this this lack of what Utah, you know, I don't want to talk about aggression and how we our behavior towards conflict resolution and all that. I'm talking more or less how we see the world and how we get out of our box and get into an uncomfortable zone and grab your family and bite the bullet and treat your young ones to a game. And Fresno State, I think, is a great bridge that can help.
Well, it says something about our community because, you know, you see these people in other parts of America, they'll brave the elements. They're going to the games. It doesn't matter, right? You go to an SEC football game, doesn't matter what's going on, what the weather's like, they're there. Texas high school football, doesn't matter. That's a thing to do. Why are people in our community, and it's a California thing as well, why are they not getting out to these events and supporting? How does our Jeff Tedfer put the product he's putting on the field in football? And their crowd spiked up a little bit this year, but that stadium should have been sold out.
Yeah.
You know, that's I mean, he pulled the greatest turnaround that college football has seen in how long?
Yeah.
There's no excuse for that stadium not being filled. So what does it say about our community or the fact that, you know, this has hurt us in the past? Edison Bullard's going to play on TV, and all of a sudden there's 1,000 less people at the game. So, yeah, I don't know what it is. There's a lot of factors that goes in there. But people definitely need to start supporting it or we're going to lose it.
Well, what's scary to me is that I had signaled, you know, I get the schedules like everybody else does. I look down at, these are the can't-miss games. I want to definitely, whatever I'm doing, I'm going to find a way to get there. One was last night, Cal Berkeley. The other one coming up will be the Nevada game. And there'll be a few others, San Diego State. But I'm hoping that we can continue in our sports forum of what we talk about, ways that we can continue to keep this at the forefront. Because this product that Fresno State basketball is putting out right now, we were talking about last night at the game, that it is, without question, take nothing away from Coach Terry and what he was trying to accomplish. This is a different level.
Right,
these guys are playing at a level to me.
The word is they're tougher, right?
Yeah, they're tougher, yeah. And they're having some fun on offense, but defense, they're digging in. If they're not playing the game the right way, of course they're going to sit down. And the coach is going to go up to them and then tell them, nice, are you ready to go back in? And they're going to go in. I see the enthusiasm. I like it. I'm just concerned that this was Cal Berkeley. This was a Pac-12 shellacking we just put on somebody. And there was not enough people there, I believe, to even make a dent in discussing this the following day.
So we've grown. I mean, we're up to 500,000 people in Fresno now, right?
Yes.
And I don't know what, if you include Clovis, I don't know, it's 600, whatever. But
well, our community is over 1 million. And I say community,
right,
with all the outlying areas, this is 1 million-plus demographic of viable people that can attend these events.
But at 300,000, we were packing Cellon Arena, right?
Yes.
Okay. And remember, this team right now compares favorably to a lot of the teams that Boyd Grant had, and people were going to their games. This kind of describes where we're at as a community in Fresno, though. It does. We have, you know, a lot of people, you know, have moved in that maybe aren't as bought into our community. They're not Fresnans, for lack of a better term. And maybe those people aren't as bought into what goes in. You know, they're from the Bay Area. They're from Southern California. They moved here because the cost of housing makes it affordable, where they can live in a decent house in there. And they're not people that are natives of this place. Maybe that describes partly what's going on. It may be that people don't want to take their kids out on a school night, although, heck, half the school districts are on vacation now. But whatever it is, it's not a good thing. When that team going into the night, or last night, it was 7-2 or something.
Yeah, they're 8-2 now. They're 7-2 going in.
We should have a much bigger crowd than that.
And they've played well. They've knocked off a Big Ten opponent, Northwestern. They've played extremely well, and I like where they're heading. They're trending, as you say, upwards. It's a fascinating topic. You know, this is not, you're listening right now to The Rise. I'm Matt Johnson. I'm always here with Nick Papagni. He's not in right now, but we'll come back and talk about this. We'll also introduce to the discussion the coach, a real good one, an up-and-comer that obviously is his resume speaks for itself. That's Yusuf Ferris. We'll be back. You're listening to The Rise. We'll be back.
The Rise Show is sponsored by Bowman & Associates, Fashion Furniture, Van Buren Insurance, and Firehouse Subs.
Welcome back. We are live here at Fashion Furniture. This is The Rise. I'm Matt Johnson. Nick Papagni, my usual co-host, is on location out exploring all the different basketball tournaments, trying to catch in some of the action so we could report it on the PagMeter Twitter account and keep everybody up to date with what's happening in the great state of California for high school basketball. I'm joined, my co-host today is Coach Don Arax of Bullard Knights. We're talking some real fascinating stuff when it comes down to just the culture and what has changed in our country when it comes down to the rearing of a young potential student athlete and maybe some of the goods and bads. But, you know, before we go much further than that, really one of the high intellects, and I've had an opportunity to work in many areas with this next coach, and very proud of his accomplishments. And I've been very aware of his knowledge beyond the world of football and sports and all that. And now we find out that he's moving on to a new experience. Coach Don Arax, would you like to further the introduction?
Well, I think the cat already got out of the bag, but yeah, we're proud to announce something we worked on for a little bit of time, that Yusuf Ferris is going to be coming back to Bullard as co-head coach. And just a huge development for our program, and great to welcome back, you know, one of our own to the program. It's going to make a huge impact for us.
Well, let's get the coach on, Joseph Ferris. As he hands over the headset. Well, I would say congratulations, but I know this is a tough time for you coming from a program in Madera, the Madera Coyotes, which you took over and got them back to being, I don't want to say the word relevant. I think that would be a slap in the face of our school district, but you got them playing competitive football, and you more than anything else, I can see it working over at Madera South, that you've created a culture change as far as how the kids prepare to get a school day in and then obviously go compete in the world of athletics. Congratulations, though, to the move. Welcome to the show, Yosef.
Thank you. Yeah, my experience at Madera was awesome. You know, the community supported me right from the start. The admin is very supportive of their sports programs. You know, John Fernandez does a great job as the athletic director there. Marty Bitter does a great job as the district AD, and, you know, your AD, Miss Devine, she does a great job over there as well. And so the district was really supportive of the change that we were trying to create. And, you know, a lot of what I learned at Bullard from being a player and then being a top assistant there, we tried to take that culture and build it in Madera. And the kids were very receptive. Everybody was very receptive, you know. And to their credit, they fully bought in. We started changing that. We had the mantra of building a new culture, and everybody was bought into that. And culture to me is extremely important to any football program, as much as X and O's are. But I think you can't have X and O's if you don't build the culture first. So the culture to me is extremely important. And it was awesome just to be out there and really see the turnaround there. And, you know, now I'm excited to get to come home you know, I told my varsity football team when I played my senior year in the weight room that I'd be the head coach at Bullard High someday. And so, you know, coming back as a co-head coach with a mentor of mine, you know, very much like a father figure. You know, there's two men in my life that have a huge impact on me, and that's my dad and that's Coach Arax. And so
nice.
I'm just excited to be back home. And
well, Coach, I think that you've touched on a subject there with mentoring and mentors. Whether it's football or it could be softball for the girls or volleyball, whatever it might be, there are certain individuals, certain coaches that enter into a young man or a young lady's life that become very special and very meaningful in a very meaningful way. And when you say the way you said, you know, there's two men in your life, and the mentor being your father, obviously, and Coach Arax, that had to be the driving force, getting a chance to go back to your school where you were cut your teeth in the world of football and all that, right? Because I'm sure you probably had lots of opportunities. Like I know last year at Edison was calling, there was other opportunities for you. This has to be a tough decision, but it certainly makes it a lot easier when you know you're going back. I hate to say home, but let's be honest, this is home for you.
Yeah, it was a tough decision because you're leaving something special at Madera. You know, the community was awesome. The kids were awesome. But, you know, I had choices. This, you know, obviously I could have stayed at Madera. There were a few other coaching opportunities I could have took. But, you know, at the end of the day, my wife wants me to go back to Bullard. My dad wants me to go back to Bullard. And you know, Coach Arax, you know, it's quite an honor for him to come to me and say, hey, I want you to be a co-head coach.
Right.
I want you to be equal with me. Because, you know, at the end of the day, coach doesn't pat you on the back very often when you're playing for him. And as a coach, it comes down the years down the road where he says, hey, look, you know, you did a great job for me and this and that. This is a huge honor for a man that has put so much sweat equity into this program that was nothing, you know, was very bad before he got there, and I helped him as a player change it, and I helped him as a coach change it. And for him to say, look, I want you to come back and be a co-head coach and be an equal with me, that's a huge honor. That's more of an honor to me than any other job I could have got.
Yeah, and for those who don't know, when you're talking about Coach Don Arax, he's the senior officer, if you will, of this world of the fraternity of coaches. I mean, he's been at Bullard longer than anyone out there in the other high schools. Been just the longevity of that. And we talked about it last night with Coach Arax and I about, is that, you know, I'm not old or anything by any stretch, but when you've been at a place that long, it's kind of fascinating how In this day we live in now, Coach Ferris, coaches don't last very long in one spot.
Right.
And Coach Arax has stayed where he played and as an alumni of Bullard. And now here's another alumni coming back. I am certain, and I know Coach Arax will get a chance to answer this, that when you lose assistant coaches, I've been in this business a while now, and they leave, you kind of sometimes, you know, when you're a young coach, you think it's about me and I can work this magic with anybody. Just give me another coach. But there's a synergy and there's a development of young coaches. And when you find the right group, you can feel that the school is starting, it's coming alive. Mm-hmm. The program is coming alive. Mm-hmm. And it's no secret, when you develop great coaches, like Coach Arax developed you and others, worked with Kyle Biggs. Heck, I was laughing last night that his coaching tree is pretty extensive. And you look at that, you got to work your way as a head coach. I got to get that magic back. I got to get that group back together. And you guys are pulling it off. So, you know, there was no, by the way, so you know, and we didn't talk about this yet, but in the city of Madera and in the district and everything else, there was no ill will towards that guy's leaving us.
Yeah.
There was a lot of open transparency about, hey, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
When you develop someone, that call, if USC football called me right now to be like the recruiting coordinator, that's home to me. I'm sorry. I'll go battle the L.A. traffic. If UCLA called me, I'd say, what are you, out of your mind? I'm staying home. But there's that you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
that affiliation. So if you would have rumpled off and gone, coach, no disrespect to Tranquility or someone else, we'd be on your you-know-what about
right.
this idea.
Right.
But the fact you're going back to Bullard, that's a good thing.
Yeah. And, you know.
And I don't have to compete with you, and I hope they make the wrong choice when they bring in the new guy. I'm just kidding. But I don't have to see your face for these two losses I've had against you.
You know, and you know, it's the community, too. You know, the athletic director at Bullard, you know, Brandon Gilbert, he coached me. You know, we cut our teeth together as football coaches. You know, you got Chuck Manick, who's been there from the beginning, who's, you know, always been around and been a good friend of mine. And, you know, the Bullard community is my community, and it's the community that my daughter's going to grow up in. And so I want to come back, and I you know, we want to continue to have this upward climb as a community and build everything up. And what other great way to do it than through football? I mean, think about how many people football touches within the community. I mean, you're dealing with 150 kids on campus from your freshman to your JV team, right? Maybe a little bit less nowadays, but those kids then create a great atmosphere, a great culture, and then you have your cheerleaders that come cheer at the game. You have your students that come to the game, and they have an exciting deal. And so if your football culture is great, then your school culture is great.
That's right.
And if your school culture is great, then you're putting great young men and women back into the community,
absolutely.
And now your community's great.
We're all football coaches here, but absolutely, well said. We are absolutely the tip of the spear. The school year starts, and if the football culture is not right, ashamed sometimes to say it, because sometimes it's my job to get it right. And when it's not right, I do believe the overall campus experience is not the same. So that's well said, Coach. Well, you know, you're not leaving. You're part of the rest of the show the whole way. But I'd like you to hand the set back over. We're only working with two headsets right now. Back to Coach Arax. Coach,
I'd like to speak to kind of what Yosef said.
Yeah.
Is, you know, the, Yosef coming back was not going to be possible without, you know, we had a new school board member, you know, elected, Terry Sladek. You know, so we had my sister who did some great things, and then Brooke Ashton who did some amazing things, and now Terry Sladek, him coming in, you know, his kids played for me, and you know, one of the things we talked about, because maybe people think we can overstate the importance of athletics, but I don't think so. You look at a whole district over there in Clovis that was built on great athletics and activities. But one of the things I communicated to Terry was, you know, and this speaks to what you were talking about, the coaching staff. I mean, we had gotten down to zero on-staff coaches. And you cannot simply – so we dropped down and we've become mediocre the last couple of years. And a lot of that was, you know, you lose Yosef, you lose Biggs before that, you lose going back a ways, you know, Gilbert and Kevin Coggin. You start losing these coaches, and you're replacing these guys with walk-on guys who are great guys, and some of them good coaches. But, you know, it's not quite the same as having guys on staff.
Having those eyes on campus during the school day to say, hey, come over here. I got to ask you something real quick. What are you doing?
Right. Yeah. And, you know, Joseph, to be truthful, he was his last couple years, he was basically the co-head coach. The only difference was, you know, is it wasn't on paper. And it was still me dictating some things, which now moving forward were complete equals. But I see the move of Joseph coming on and the hire of Aaron Weimer as our baseball coach, and a guy who played football for us, who was a stud safety, and Slattic. This is the resurgence of what this community, because we all know what's happened in our community. You know, there's this old line out there that, well, you know, all the Bullard people just moved to the Clovis West and then now Clovis North area. Well, some of that's true, but people got to understand, 600 of the kids that live within the Bullard boundaries are not accessing the high school. That's a huge number. So we got to get those kids back, okay? And those kids come cut across all socioeconomic things and all colors. It's just Bullard kids, whatever. We got to get those kids back. And football, to talk about what Joseph's saying, we have our own little piece in this. Because as we continue to raise the profile and get Bullard football to back where it was, and Weimer gets Bullard baseball where it's going to be, and Slattic gets the academic pieces and all that stuff together, then you see a resurgence and a renaissance in our part of town. Because let me tell you what, the families are there. This old line, well, everyone's older now. Look on your computer and do the research. The number of kids per household in a Bullard area is almost exactly the same in Clovis Unified. So I see this thing as a huge start to that resurgence, getting Joseph coming back on board.
Well, we're not going to leave this alone. We'll be back. We're going to ask you to visit with Coach Vince Brandstetter, head football coach Roosevelt. Great alumni, tied in for the Fresno State Bulldogs, who's in Las Vegas. We'll talk about the Bull, then we'll come back and we'll start talking about the world of high school sports. Basketball's going, obviously, underway. And football just ended up. We've got some thoughts on the Bull games that we just got to witness in the California State High School Football Championships. You're listening to the 940 ESPN, the Valley's local sports leader. We'll be back.
The Rise Show is sponsored by Bowman & Associates, Fashion Furniture, Van Buren Insurance, and Firehouse Subs.
You are back. This is The Rise on 940 ESPN. We're here at Fashion Furniture, the one and only, the leader in the industry. They happen to be one of the local icons who gives back more than they actually receive to our community, to local high school sports, junior colleges, and, of course, the Fresno State Bulldogs. We're always happy to be here. I'm visited and joined by Don Arax, Coach Joseph Ferris, who's now back at Bullard as the other head coach. It's a dual head coaching deal. I kind of like that deal, by the way. I'd like to get like three or four guys like that on my staff. Everyone gets a department. But we also want to thank Firehouse Subs. And obviously, last night we were at a Fresno State Bulldog basketball game watching Coach Hudson and his team go to work on the Cal Bears of the Pac-12 Conference. We're now 2-0 against the Pac-12. We demolished Arizona State in the Vegas Bowl, and we took care of business last night at the Save Mart Center. It was a great time. I want to thank Freddie Fagundes. Mr. Fagundes is very accommodating, and we thank you so much last night at the suite. And, of course, Helena Agra Enterprises Incorporated for allowing all these coaches and all these great fanatics of our valley to entertain themselves in your perfect, beautiful suite. Thank you so much. And right now, one of the coaches that was at that event last night had a pretty good year in football, but he is a Fresno State football alumni and was at the Vegas Bowl. So to get a little insight on what took place down in Las Vegas, we're introducing Vince Brandstetter, the head football coach, Roosevelt High School. How are you, Vince?
I'm doing good, thanks.
Yeah, well, how'd you enjoy that basketball game last night?
It was good. Obviously, we got a really good basketball team. I don't know if anybody knows about it, but I mean, overall, I mean, those guys can play. You know, I kind of remember, you know, when I was back in my playing days, back in the day, you know, you couldn't, even as an athlete, you couldn't get a ticket to a basketball game. And now it's, there's a lot of fans dressed as seats. It'd be nice if we get that, to change that.
Well, you know, there's so many different ways to talk and explore the reasons why. As an alumni of Fresno State, what do you think? How did it turn to that? Was it a new venue, or what do you think in your opinion, was the underlying cause for just the apathy of the fans?
I have no idea. I just think this day and age, there's a lot more going on, particularly with cell phones. But I think there's just more to do, and you know, the going to a game isn't maybe a top priority for a young kid these days. You know, like I said, growing up, you know, if I got to catch a college game or an NBA game, or you know, obviously the Rams and the Raiders were in LA at the time. I mean, I was, in my opinion, that was the coolest thing I could do. But I don't know. It's kind of sad because. You know, as an athlete, you know what the players put into it, and you know what the coaches put into it, and you know, it's almost deserving for them to get the support that they deserve.
Absolutely, and with the great work that Jeff Tedford and his staff of coaches at Fresno State for the football program, what they've accomplished, it did seem a little trend. Now, granted, it is Las Vegas; it's a destination point for many. But you were at the Las Vegas Bowl. The crowd, I thought, was tremendous. The weather was beautiful. Tell us about your Vegas Bowl experience.
Yeah, it was great. Obviously, I played in that bowl game as a player back in the day, and then I've been fortunate to be around some kids that I've been the coaching staffs with, and that was actually my third Vegas Bowl, and by far, that was the best attendance I've seen as a spectator. You know, the crowd was into it. I'm sure there was plenty of money being wagered on it in the city of Las Vegas. I know I had a little bit on it myself.
Oh yeah.
I'm sure it was. Yeah, it was a good time. I mean, you know, for me, you know, that's a destination that can be reached as a fan. You know, I think a lot of people feel that way, and people made their way out there.
You know, now as you sat and got in the parking lot, you came up to get your tickets and all the things that go along with the experience of going to a football game. Did you get a chance to bump into any old alumni or guys that you know were ball players, or what was the level of alumni, football alums support that you witnessed?
Yeah, I mean, I saw a lot of guys from my era. It was nice to catch up. You know, I've seen some guys that I haven't really seen in a long time. And then, you know, when I was going to get my tickets at the game, you know, I ran into some guys that obviously looked a lot younger than me, but, you know, I introduced myself and let them know who I was. And, you know, it was just kind of when you go through something, you kind of have that common experience. You know, it doesn't matter if it was 10 years ago or if it's current, you know, it's kind of the same process. It's a grind. And as a player, you can appreciate that.
Now you played, give us the years that you played. I know Coach Tedford was there for a year with you, or give us the background.
Yeah, it was there 2 years. I played four straight years. I was there from 96 to 99. I was fortunate to get recruited by Coach Tedford. It was just kind of by chance. He was at a playoff game, and he was there watching a kid on the other team, and I somehow stuck out to him a little bit. And, you know, from there they kind of started recruiting me, and the rest was history. So, you know, the high school athletes, you know, that didn't get what they wanted on signing day, or, you know, the one that's coming up, you know, just keep working, and you never know, you know, who's watching, and you got to train that way. And it kind of worked out for me. So, you know, I'm living proof of, you know, just being patient and trusting the process.
Well, how has the offense changed over the years from when you were there and Coach Tedford, I'm assuming, was the offensive coordinator, quarterback coach?
Yeah. I don't think we ever got in shotgun. And you know, that's pretty much all they do, and, you know, unless they get down on the goal line, and obviously they got a philosophy and it's working great, and, you know, I think they got a great coaching staff, and hopefully they can keep that intact for a long time, and if they do, I truly believe that what they're doing is just going to kind of be a common theme again around here.
One last question. The world of high school football, and you're the coach. We're visiting with Vince Branstetter, the Roosevelt Rough Riders head football coach, was an alumni of Fresno State. You've seen now the progression to where we have two signing days. We have the early signing period, which Coach Arax and I will talk about a little later in the show with the signees. And of course, in February, they'll have the second opportunity. Do you like that plan, or do you have any comment on that?
Well, I mean, I haven't lived it as a college coach or a player, but, you know, I can't say being a 17-year-old kid and, you know, a kid that's getting heavily recruited, it can be overwhelming. You know, I remember the stress of, you know, this is before Twitter and cell phones. Like if a college coach called my house and I wasn't there, you know, I felt like, oh my God, I'm never going to get recruited again, you know? And, so it's just kind of, I think for some guys, it's probably more of a relief, to kind of get it over with and say, hey, this is what I'm doing. And, you know, they can kind of change their focus to where they're going and what the plan, what their school has informed for them. And yeah, I think overall, you know, it's good, but I'm sure it could be tough on the coaching side of things now too, because, you know, teams have bowl games and, you know, trying to, you know, mix in a bowl game and recruiting season. I'm sure Fresno State was quite busy and didn't get to enjoy their time like most bowl games in years past.
Well, it cracks me up as the biggest negative to the whole idea from the coaching world was Nick Saban at Alabama. I can't believe this. We've got bowl games to prepare for. Well, guess what? Right now, he's still number one in the recruiting battles. Seemed to be doing a pretty good job out at Alabama getting the guys they need. So I guess there's pros and cons to everything. But, you know, it's been a pleasure. It was a good time last night getting to enjoy the basketball game with you and the others. A great year. Congratulations to Roosevelt Rough Riders. And you're just building that team as I knew you would. Thanks for joining us. That's Vince Branstetter.
All right, thanks for having me, guys.
You bet. Well, Coach Joseph Ferris, before we take the break, I mean, you heard that, and we talked before a little bit about, you know, the enthusiasm in the world of high school that trends into college. You get a chance to watch the Vegas Bowl?
I did.
Yeah, didn't it seem that you could say I started feeling a little atmosphere there.
Yeah.
It is Vegas. It's not like we're going to, you know, the Bahamas for a bowl game or, you know, some little town in San Antonio or something. But I thought that the football team was beginning to,
yes,
with the success of the show.
And there's starting to be a lot of excitement in the community. I mean, I had two buddies that took a trip to Boise. You know, they drove there and they sat in that cold
snowstorm.
Got on the field, and that's a moment. They got to celebrate with that team that finally beat them on the blue turf that was white that night. And then you see all your Twitter feed and your Facebook feed of everybody at the Vegas Bowl, the dad that broke his leg and is still cheering Go Dogs, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I like seeing that stuff because that's excitement. Again, that's community and that's culture within Fresno.
So maybe it's nothing more. We'll take a break, but maybe it's nothing more than just we have to win. We have to win big, and then we might turn this trend around to getting the population of the basketball games back. We'll see. Well, we'll take a break. We'll get back here at Fashion Furniture in just a short minute. Thank you for listening. We'll be right back.
The Rice Show is sponsored by Bowman & Associates, Fashion Furniture, Van Buren Insurance, and Firehouse Subs.
We're back live here at Fashion Furniture. I'm Matt Johnson, joined with the coach, Don Arax, who, by the way, you're not that old.
No.
But comparative speaking to some of the guys out there, the Nick Sabans and the Pete Carrolls of the world, you're still in your 50s now.
That's what we were talking about, I think, last night, is 54, I guess, is seen as old, but Saban's in his mid to late 60s, correct?
Yeah. Nick is 64, and
Belichick's how old?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, Coach Ferris says 103. I think he's at least 80, isn't he? He's been here forever, for crying out loud. Pete Carroll, 66, just turned 67. So you've got a lot of life in you, but that's not the topic. The topic is, piggybacking off that great experience that a lot of us Bulldog fanatical fans for football had at Vegas. Apparently, the crowd looked good. It looked like a larger crowd than I've seen in Red Wavers showing up. And so the trend is talking with Coach Ferris before the break, we talked about, is winning the only solution? And what are the causes? Maybe Title IX. I mean, what do you think?
Winning, and we were talking off air about the league.
The league.
Okay, the league you're in. Joseph mentioned, you know, if Wisconsin comes in, are you going to go to the game? You're going to watch that. If Oregon were coming in and the league doesn't allow us to bring in those folks, the Title IX one is a complicated issue. Fresno State definitely was not in compliance for years and did some really stupid things, and then maybe they overcorrected a little bit. So a lot of those factors come into play.
Well, money and budget, you know, the power schools, the Michigans of the world that have so much extra disposable income to throw at the variety of all these Olympic sports and these different exploratory areas of sport, which is good, but they have the kind of income where they can say, look, the golf team isn't getting the recruits we need. We need more money to get on the road and recruit. Throw $100,000 their way. When you're dealing in the world of fiscal struggles that Fresno State has openly had to go through, that might be a little bit of the problem from the days of Kevin Sweeney and those, Boyd Grant, and, of course, right up to Jerry Tarkany, which, by the way, I think that was the tsunami that hit our town that was unlike anything.
Right.
Normally you could say, well, you could hire whoever, but they're still not going to change the crowd. I think Jerry Tarkany, just the charismatic nature of the man, brought an extra 5,000 people to each game at Selland Arena. Those games were absolutely always sellouts.
Absolutely, but remember, yes, that took it to a new level, but, you know, Boyd Grant, again, that's where it started, right? And
yep.
Then he just, Tarkanian took it to a whole nother level. I mean, think about the budgets that, like, an SEC school has for their athletic budget, or Alabama football, and you start thinking about, when you're talking about equity in college sports, it doesn't exist. And so the same teams are in the playoff. Isn't it the same guys, cast of characters, in the playoff discussion? And that's too bad that's the way it is, but as it always is, money kind of talks, right?
Well, how long do you think the Mountain West Conference is going to last? In this new age of we're going to go to 18 playoffs, we're going to be more money thrown in the world of college football and college basketball specifically, how long can you last in a conference like this when the league is down, attendance numbers are down, there's struggles everywhere, and how do they, and what do they have to pay or not? How do they get into the Pac-12 conference and make it a larger conference?
Yeah, you know, that Boise game was kind of a moment where I realized, you looked at the crowd at that Boise game, you can't blame the weather because those folks are...
Yeah.
And that was a very disappointing crowd. I think there was 20,000 or...
The game before that, where Fresno State was just up there playing, the weather wasn't like that, and it was an abysmal crowd.
Right.
And then they, you know, and they're supposed to be the, you know, the up until this moment, the head, the top dog of our conference.
Right.
And they're not packing them in there. I think it's time, and I do believe what you're 100% correct. We can never bring in USC, UCLA, Oregon, Washington until we're aligned with the conference.
That's right.
Where there is no rule. Like, well, you can play us, but we're not going there.
Right.
Fresno. I wonder in the back door dealings, how far are we about thinking we should be? We need to get out of this conference, and we need to join forces with Boise State. I'm sure the Pac-12 right now is listening because these mega conference deals are getting bigger and bigger. That might be the solution we're looking for.
Yeah, then you're talking TV money, right?
Yes.
You're talking bowl money, which is significant when that goes to all the schools in the conference. And, you know, short of that, I mean, look, it comes down to, you bring a recruit. How do you win? You win with great athletes, right?
That's right.
Coaches aren't as important as athletes. We all know that. And so now you bring a recruit onto that campus, and he sees your academic center, your weight room, your training facility, your locker room. That's what sells people, you know. Bulldog Stadium, you know, we got to get it renovated, right? So those things. And that makes a difference for the student athlete, huge difference.
And not only that, but it also, once again, the spectator, the fan. Do I want to go to the stadium and watch Air Force, or would I like getting up in the morning knowing, honey, let's get it packed. We got to get there early because the Trojans are at Sweeney Field today.
That's right.
I think we'd have some pretty big crowds.
Makes a little difference, right?
A little difference. And when the UCLA Bruin basketball team's invading Save Mart Center, I think there's going to be a few more showing up than they did last night.
So what you're saying is people don't want to watch Air Force run the triple option. Probably not, huh?
Well, probably not, but actually Air Force is probably a bad example. There's others I could have picked on,
but you know
what I'm talking about.
No, I know exactly what
you're talking about. Watching Incarnate Word at Bulldog Stadium was not like my one of the most pleasurable experiences for me. However, it was football. Going into now recruiting, and now we're getting back to high school football and what's going on, early signing period. How has that affected at all? You're a member of a school. Heck, Josh Kelly just signed with Fresno State. He was one of your guys all the way up till his senior year, and you've had a lot of good college football recruits come through the program. Early signing and then another signing date. Are you affected at all by that?
Don't know enough about it yet. I think the one interesting thing with the two dates is, once you get past the first date, then there's a lot more schools that now, like, we have a kid, Marcus Fulcher, right now, who I think Eastern Washington, who's in the national 1AA national championship this weekend. I think they're going to offer him in the next couple of days, and I think Sac State's going to offer him. Well, you know, those are going to happen, but after this initial date, there's probably going to be more schools that are going to leap in. So it's a little different. And what Vince talked about is interesting, is it's probably putting a lot more pressure on the college guy. As a high school coach, I like it. I got sick of that whole there's this one date and the show behind it. Enough is enough. I think that the two dates is a better thing. But I don't know enough. We're not far enough into it for me to make an absolute decision on that.
Well, when we come back, we're getting ready to take a break. We come back, we're now going to get back in. You're probably sitting driving somewhere or listening to the show thinking, what are they talking about? When are we going to talk about San Joaquin Memorial and the football playoff and the basketball tournament out at Clovis West and how that went down? That's coming next. You're listening to The Rise on 940 ESPN. We'll be back.
It's time for the 940 ESPN Rye Show. The 940 ESPN Rye Show is brought to you by Bowman & Associates, Fashion Furniture, Van Buren Insurance, and Firehouse Subs. And now, here are your hosts, Nick Papagni and Matt Johnson.
Well, thanks for still staying with us. We're here live from Fashion Furniture. Always want to thank Fashion Furniture for all they do for local sports and the local community. Thank you, Fashion Furniture, for being our host, and, of course, Firehouse Subs. Want to thank last night. Freddie treated us well in that suite, didn't he?
Freddie's the best.
Oh, yeah. We had a Mr. Freddie Fagundes, of course. He was there, and we enjoyed the boys watching the basketball game. I almost said the boys' basketball game. That's still in my high school world. That was a man's game there going on last night.
The one thing I noted, I don't think Freddie had his traditional hat on, did he, his cowboy hat?
He had it on.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
He
was in his bulldog red, but he was wearing the hat.
He's always got his hat.
Very vocal, made a lot of noise last night. That game did not start out. It was like, Cal kind of hit a few jumpers early and things were going the other way. And boom, then Fresno State got it going. Coach Hudson, congratulations. We are really, really liking your style and your coaching. And, boy, he looked good last night. That suit he was wearing, he had the little pocket scarf in. He was ready to roll.
Absolutely.
But in the world of high school football and getting back to the state playoffs, and, of course, we had two teams. Strathmore got in there and ran into a buzzsaw in Hillmar in their championship game for the state. But the game I was really intrigued by was San Joaquin Memorial taking on Lawndale. Which I researched Lawndale, and I had to tell the PAG meter, whoa, 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 not so fast. He put it right away in the beginning, 24-point favorite for San Joaquin Memorial. And I think everybody, including me, was really drinking the Kool-Aid with the kind of football team that Coach Gostin, I say that joking because that's how they pronounce his name all throughout the broadcast. Horrible job by the broadcasters of that game. But Coach Anthony Gostin from San Joaquin Memorial had put together one heck of a year, and he was multi-talented at many of the key positions. But during that game, there was some questionable calls. But I'd like to start with you as a coach on an injury front. Arguably the best wide receiver I've seen. I've told the colleges, I've seen a lot of good ones, but he might be the best I've really seen up close and personal in a long time, and not just Central Valley, but watching high school football. And, of course, we're talking about the junior wide receiver, Jalen McMillan, who's got offers from just about every Power 5 conference school out there. And he's only a junior, so he still has another year to continue his education and prepare for college. But he was injured, and everybody in the Valley that's in the know was getting the signals that he's out.
Right.
He's got some type of internal injury to one of his organs, and most likely he will not be playing in the game. And there was some who I checked with that said, no, he's done. He's in the hospital. He's not playing.
Yeah, in fact, I had heard that he was out for baseball season as well.
The story got bigger and bigger. So here I am getting ready to sit down and tune in with the game on television, like all the state games are, getting excited, and I'm watching the team warm up, and Pag Meter's out at a basketball tournament, finishing up with Clovis, out at Clovis West. And I texted him. I said, hey, guy, I know you've probably tweeted out about Jalen McMillan not playing, but he's in full gear warming up. I'm watching him catch balls.
Right.
And it's not like he's just on the sideline, I thought, for a minute. Maybe just there for, right, emotional support. No, he's running routes and catching footballs. What? And then the game starts, and Jalen McMillan is not on the field. Blunder number one. Forget the calls. We're not at the bad calls yet. Blunder number one, no one in the broadcast booth seemed to notice that the number one wide receiver prospect in our state of California is not playing for Memorial. It took them almost a whole half to figure it out.
Probably need to do their homework a little bit better to know.
So my logical thinking was, stay with me on this, Coach Arax and Coach Ferris, is that, well, it is exactly not a bad idea. The guy's worked his tail off. The team needs his support, so he's there for support. They go into the locker room down. I think the score was 12-6, I believe. But they go into the locker room down, and the second half starts, and Jalen McMillan runs onto the field. First play from scrimmage, they throw deep ball down the sideline, and I'm saying, this guy is fully back.
Yeah.
Question is this. How does he not play in the first half if he's able to play in the second half?
So the only thing I could figure is you're in a big game, and let's say we're playing an early season game, and a kid gets his finger injured, and or a fairly significant injury, and you're not going to risk it, right? Hey,
right.
We're early on in the year. This may have been a deal where the injury was significant, and the kid, you know, sucked it up and said, "Coach, I want to go in," and maybe against the advice of his doctors or his parents that he wasn't going to play. That's the only thing I could figure.
Well, in the great, beautiful mind of the Pag Meter, his words to me were, let me figure this out. He was injured enough to where he could not play the second half, but within that 30-minute time frame, he got healthy again. Healthy enough to come into the game. Seems to me, if you show up and you're in uniform, the time to see if you can go on the injury is the first half. Then you take the player out and say, I can't handle it.
Yeah.
Or whatever, ribbon, whatever it is, can't handle it. But to sit around on a sideline, and by the way, the weather was a little chilly, and now I'm going to put you in. I'm asking, obviously, so people are like, well, why don't you just ask the source? And we'll get to that after probably the new year and talk more in depth of this. We want to give the principals. I mean, they had had a great season, San Joaquin Memorial. We'll let them sit on a little bit before I start asking and probing too many questions here. But doesn't that seem natural that when your player's injured, and if he's injured, you kind of give him a run early, see what he's like, then you pull him. They waited to the second half to put him into the game.
Yeah, I got to believe that the injury was significant enough that they were going to say, okay, let's not risk it, and then at some point, okay, maybe the kid took a little bit of a chance. Because you got to know, you don't get too many opportunities to play in a state championship game, obviously.
Right.
And so I would think that would be the scenario where he's, you know, hey, probably shouldn't play, and then all of a sudden the second half comes, and he sees his team is down, and they're going to need him, and hey, coach, you know, I'm going to tough it out for the team, and I'm going to get in there. You know, we won't know because it's high school football. In college or NFL, we'd have
injury reports. You have to release the injury report.
We'd have the whole thing out. We'd know exactly where it is. And I think the worst offense in this is the announcers not knowing that he wasn't playing the game.
Well, that was the first part. So let's get to the announcers. So then the game obviously begins, and Coach goes, and I have to ask you, you've been in this game longer than I have. I've always pronounced Anthony Gostin, the head coach, used to be the athletic director, now vice principal, great guy, love the kid. Anthony Gostin. All game long, they were calling him Anthony Gostin. It was, and I know because we make mistakes on radio, we do play-by-play, Nick Pagny and I, and I understand that, but we have an obligation to get some of the key players' names pronounced correctly.
Yeah.
And
so
how
what
do you
– I mean, I learned this as a young coach at Reedley. We had an announcer that was one of the best announcers around. And he'd sit down with me, okay, give me phonetically every kid's name. It's pretty simple, right? So we'd go down every kid's name, blah, blah, blah. Jones is easy. I got that one. Oh, what's this Polish name? How do you say that?
Exactly.
I mean, that's how you, if you're doing the game the right way. But what I had asked you is, was it the crew, the old Cal?
It wasn't. It was not Troy. No, not Troy was on his name.
Pawlowski or
Ron Powell or Paul. Now you're on to it. It's Pulowski.
I forget. He was a Cal
quarterback.
So we were on one of their regional broadcasts at the time, and they were professional. They were on the money, you know, and that's all you do. Well, you just go over the roster and you look, okay, how do we – and who are the best players, by the way? Okay.
That's how you start the game. You find out from somebody who are the key. I go to Coach Ferris before a Madera game, and I ask him on a phone call, or I go down to the sideline and say, okay, I've noticed you got a 1,000-yard rusher. You got the 4,000-yard quarterback. Make sure I get this right, okay? And, of course, we usually pronounce Yosef, and Yusuf is how – so we screw it up. We can't screw it up.
I think Yusuf is actually
Yusuf is the proper term. Our proper name pronunciation. So we get it right. And if Pag Meter's getting it wrong, I'll step in and say, hey, I think that was Gonzalez on the tackle, not Consalvo, or however he says it. Okay. So now we're hitting Gostin. Then here's the big one, though. So the play-by-play guy missed that. His color guy, the guy, the role that I play, was pronouncing the quarterback, who's the number one guy on the roster, Alec Trujillo, or Alec Trujillo, or every way was wrong. But the play-by-play guy had Alec Trujillo and said it correctly over and over again.
He must be from Utah or something, because we all would know how
San Jose.
Okay, we know how to pronounce that.
I think,
We have a large Latino population in the state of California.
Yeah.
Okay. We know how to pronounce. In Fresno, people know how to pronounce Armenian names,
to
right?
The Trujillo family. The great quarterback, we apologize. To me, I know it's a little detail, but coming from our valley and taking keen interest in watching one of our valley teams go win a state championship, I was irate. I wanted to call the station with the improper pronunciation of the quarterback's name. And then, of course, we get introduced to the white hat and the crack team of officials that were in charge of this operation. And then I fully realized that they decided to bring the JV announcers and the JV officiating crew to our championship game representing our valley.
Right, right.
Because as a coach, help me out, Don, has there been times in a game where you know proof positive they blew it? Isn't there a time where you, whoa, time out then. I need to get some more further clarification. Because they glossed over this safety on the punt idea that it had the entire broadcast team and everyone in California started tweeting back and forth. Whoa. Did they call the punt? Since it was the original thought by the officials and, I believe, the announcing crew, they said the ball was snapped over the punter's head, rolled to the end zone, therefore dead ball, can't play in the end zone in high school football. Like if it's a kickoff and it goes in the end zone.
Right.
And right away, I go, what? I've never heard of such a thing. Right. That's a live ball.
Right.
If they recover it, the team on defense, that's a touchdown.
That's right.
So the San Joaquin Memorial punter rolls back, ball over his head, regathers the ball, and prepares himself to kick it out. Whistles are blowing right or left. The question is, did the officials change the call when they realized they made a classic blunder and then make a claim that the player stepped out of bounds, which clearly, I could see if it was 6 inches of room. He had a foot or more of room still in the field to play.
Right. Well, I got to believe that officiating crew had to be one of the top officiating crews, right?
I cannot believe they were. There's
because
no way
if you're going to play a state game, like now, you know, Valley Championship games, the top crews
there's 16 champions. I don't believe there's 16 sets of crews that are at that level. I believe there's probably about 8 championship crews that you could put together for a game of that magnitude.
Right.
It's not like a Super Bowl or a college national championship game where you get a collection of 12 guys, let's pick the top 6 or whatever we have. They had to have crews everywhere.
It may have been the crew that we had the Clovis game, huh? Is that what you're saying?
It might have been. Thank you. The famous 12-man game. Or that wasn't the 12-man game.
No,
you had a different.
I always stick up. We had every game had great officiating but one game.
One game.
You know, you're
going to
get
you.
One of those.
Thank you. Well, yes. That's a different story.
Yes.
I always question when one school district has a set group of officials, they do all the games.
That's a problem. That wasn't this case.
Okay. Fair enough.
No, that wasn't this case.
So, right away, I'm feeling that they blew that call. First, I'm a little upset because I was hoping that Coach Gostin would run on the field and take a timeout and say, I need clarification completely.
Right.
So you could look in the eye of the head coach and say, no, Coach, he was clearly out of bounds, or he was clearly, I made a mistake. Let's do what most people should do in that situation, which is called inadvertent whistle.
Right.
Let's play it over again.
Right.
Let's get some better clarification before we move on in a critical point of the game like that. That's one of the big gaps. We'll talk about number 2 on the fumble recovery for touchdown, or was it for the San Joaquin Memorial Panthers. We'll be back. You're listening to 940 ESPN, the Valley's local sports leader.
The Rise Show is sponsored by Bowman & Associates, Fashion Furniture, Van Buren Insurance, and Firehouse Subs.
We're back live. Fashion Furniture, this is The Rise. Thank you for listening. We're now into that high school mode to finish out the story. We'll catch up with Nick Anderson and talk high school basketball here in just a few moments. But let's finish with the state football championship game. Lawndale playing our champion from the north, the San Joaquin Memorial Panthers. And we talked about the punt, and the thing went over his head, and the Panther punter and late in the third quarter gathered it up, and the whistle blows, and they blew the call. Okay, that's apparent. My feeling, and I'm talking with Yosef Ferris, now the The co-head coach of the Bullard Knights is here visiting football. At that point, my feeling in my living room was thinking, I sure hope, because you could see the official knew he blew the call. And he had no way to go back other than suck it up and then get the Lawndale coach mad at him by saying, you know, that's an inadvertent whistle. I blew that one. Let's do it, play over, punt, repunt. But he didn't. The game continues. My thought was now it looks like every call that went against Lawndale was like a phantom call. The two illegal man downfield calls that he made were clearly on replay. The lineman's right at the line of scrimmage. And that took away big gains by Lawndale. I just felt like the whole game was skewed after that moment. Tell me about your perception of what you saw.
Yeah, I mean, the punt deal was clear as day that he did not step out.
Yes.
And so I'm sure the ref realized that,
yes,
like you're saying, and,
yeah,
and probably felt horrible.
Yeah, isn't that human nature?
And he's on TV.
Yes.
You know, and so he's going to hear it.
Yep.
It's going to be on Twitter. It's going to be on the Rise Show, you know. And
you hate that for officials. They hate, I know they hate to be a part of the outcome of a game, adversely or pro. They just want to keep it neutral.
And so he was probably trying to make, do like you're saying, create some makeup calls.
It just appeared that way to me, that it was getting out of hand, that the game was getting away from the officiating crew. And then, of course, we go throughout the game with controversial calls, and it wasn't just that. After that point, it wasn't all against Memorial. There were some calls against Lawndale that I thought, that's phantom call.
Mm-hmm.
Point number one, and our good friend Art, one of our regulars here, he made a great point. Everybody knows, including the officiating crew, that the games are televised. Couldn't we have had, like, you know, we got to get this right.
Yeah.
Take a break. Get on the headset with the guy upstairs and say, what do you guys see? He wasn't out of bounds. All right, I blew it. Inadvertent whistle, let's replay.
Get it right.
Get it right. I'm not asking for high school football or any sports to have replay. But in times like that, isn't there should be a bylaw that allows us to go to the tape and watch the footage.
In a state championship game, I think every single coach would be okay with that.
Thank you. And then, of course, we get to the end of the game, and right, wrong, or indifferent, let's not kid ourselves, Memorial was getting pushed all over the yard. Statistical information clearly points that the better team that night was winning the game. Clearly. It wasn't like it was one of those, you know, knock down, drag out, take it to the wire. But somehow Memorial, with all the competitive juices they had, they stayed in the game. And Lawndale wasn't good enough to just blow it out after that point. So we're coming down the field to finish the game. You're down by 8 points. I'm setting up the play for you, Coach Ferris. San Joaquin Memorial runs a play. They throw the football in the end zone, and there's pass interference. Pass interference, which was third down, by the way. In high school, I think a lot of people don't realize that pass interference is not an automatic first down.
Right.
It was half the distance of the goal. They moved it to about the yard and a half yard line. It's fourth down for San Joaquin Memorial. Now, I can question, which we all do, and I hate to say it, people who think, that's not right, don't be an armchair. We're all armchair quarterbacks.
Right.
And I'm questioning the call to do a direct snap to Alex Trujillo, the quarterback, and run it into the line of scrimmage against that massive force of defensive line that they were playing with Lawndale. And as he got tackled about a yard short, as he's going down on replay, you could clearly see the ball comes out. At the end of that, was he completely down? I actually think they got the call right after the replay that he finished, and then he reached out and he put the ball in the end zone. All you could see is the scrum of bodies got off the pile. Was that that he was over the end zone line?
And that was a tough call.
Very tough call to make.
And if they really wanted to give a makeup call to that punt, that would have been it right there. But I do think they got it right.
I think he
recovered it.
I think he was down, then he kind of squeaked it in,
yeah,
and it was close. Once again, if I could just go to the replay, I've got a full television crew on hand. Can I take a final look at that just to not feel like we robbed any of these young men of their dream in life of winning the state championship? They never did. I got the exact opposite of that. I got the announcers calling it as if they know what the ruling was that the official said, nope, Lawndale recovered the fumble. Right away, what are they looking?
Right.
And then later on, the reports come out, you know, after the fact that, no, the official actually said that we thought he was down before the ball went over the end zone. But as a viewing audience member, I'm really confused and pissed off.
Right.
Once again, as a high school football coach, you feel in a game of magnitude, can't we go to a replay?
Get it right.
Well, there it is.
There's a lot that goes into that. I mean, listen, these kids have been working pretty much for a whole year. I mean, they started in January, and you get into that state championship game, and that was almost a whole year, you know?
Can
we get it right?
Thank you. And certainly that team was built not for a section championship. They were built to get revenge from their loss in the playoffs last year when they took that road trip out to, Raleigh or wherever it was they had to go. Yeah. That was a heck of a trip.
Now, they accomplished a lot. I mean, they Division III Valley champs.
They did.
Arguably Division II Valley champs.
Arguably, I wanted them in the final of Division I.
And then can we get the Central game scheduled?
But incidentally, and I have to say this because we had a lot of great recruits sign letters and all that, and I had been very vocal, Yusuf, that the second best team, and they're close to being the best team, was San Joaquin Memorial. But after further review of watching a competitive team finally play them, not a Division III opponent, you know, not my Madera South Stallions or your Coyotes or others. They went through a lot of us. They were playing a team that was well-equipped. They could not have beaten Central.
No.
And I'm not so sure they could have beaten Buchanan. I'm not so sure they beat Liberty Bakersfield. And now I put them in a Bakersfield-type driller-type setup. So they're probably fairly ranked in that 4 or 5 spot for overall in the year.
Yeah. Those Liberty and Central – that was a heck of a football game, man.
Classic.
And what Liberty's doing down in Bakersfield, how well coached they are. That Liberty Buchanan game, that was one of the best coached football games I had seen in a long time. And to watch them play against Central and just the physicality.
You shocked after watching Folsom and they threw up all those points against Central to get to their championship game and actually be in a dogfight with Cathedral Catholic of San Diego area? And They win the game in overtime. You know, they 21 points on the board.
Yeah,
shocking.
A lot of ups and downs in the state of California.
It was just shocking. I tuned in on that game and I thought, oh, this is going to be Folsom 55-20 Cathedral or something. And I saw that they were losing to Cathedral Catholic, and I thought it must be the first 8 minutes of the game, and it was almost the end.
Yeah.
That's when I took notice that Folsom, we get all excited, but then we realize Modern Day probably would have beat Folsom like a rented stepchild.
Right.
I mean, I'm guessing.
Right. Modern Day's another.
They're a whole different.
They're a whole other animal. John Bosco.
When every position on the team is a Division I recruit.
And their backup.
What could you do, Coach Arax? How's your team? Well, I got 22 Division I guys. You think you might win a few ball games?
Well, in this area, if you have four on one team, it's going to make a huge difference.
Yes.
I heard a lot of the Saturday morning quarterbacking, you know, after the Central game and giving up that many points. But the reality is, and what's impressive, that's a public school doing that.
Yeah.
But the reality is that school has kids moving in from all over the
area
to play at that school. Their offensive line, I did not see. I watched that game from beginning to end. I have not seen an offensive line like that in our section.
Ever.
In a long time, if ever.
Yeah.
The recruiters come by and they talk about there's no linemen in the valley. There's no linemen in the valley. And we just simply don't have those type of cats. And so, I mean, you know, kind of people have put the pause button on being too hard on Central. I mean, that was an outstanding football team.
Well, yeah, and then for any of the, you know, the doubters, and there's not many, of course, Trent Tompkins is clearly, and he's up, by the way, for the California State Player of the Year. He's in the top 5 finalists, and the names on that list is a who's who list of Division I standouts. Trent Tompkins is the real deal. He threw over 4 bills against Folsom, ran for 80-plus yards on the ground. He clearly, no question about it. I mean, we've got the placements right. I mean, Alec Trujillo, for all his good, for Colt Nelson over at Madera, there's so many good quarterbacks. The quarterback down in Tulare was awesome. The quarterback, there was some really good quarterback,
right.
Better I've ever seen ever. The cream of the crop, and I think the California State voting board is seeing it now. Trent Tompkins was phenomenal.
I said this, I don't know, one of the television crews came by to interview me on Tompkins, and I said, and I mean this is no slight against Kyle or Central, he transformed that entire program. Yeah. And again, it goes back to what I said earlier, you know, great players kind of trumps great
That's
coaching.
Correct. That's correct.
And that kid's phenomenal. I mean, I could not find, I know his release, people talk about that, and we can have a discussion about how he translates to the next level or whatever that. As a high school football quarterback, and we coach, Joseph and I coached against, you know, Cody Kessler.
Yeah.
Okay. To me, wasn't even close. This kid was unbelievable. Blitz him, he's going to get out of it. He's tough. He's smart. I mean, he had everything. I mean, you may not see a guy like that for a while.
Yeah, and he's not slight of build. The guy's I'm on the sideline for that state game in Folsom, and I've known him and his family forever. And you look at his calves and his development. He's a high-level tailback, almost slash fullback guy running around out there. He's a miniature short version of a Tim Tebow.
Right.
Just thick. And been able to, as Vince Brandstetter actually said, the difference is most quarterbacks are looking to slip and get down. He'll actually turn shoulder pad on you and try to knock you out.
And, you know, so there are those guys, those outliers, right?
Right.
Doug Flutie, outlier,
yep.
right?
Yep.
Who knows what Tompkins? I know he's going to Davis.
Yeah, and Coach Dan Hawkins has got a real good one. And
none of us know enough to say.
Don't know.
I mean, we have people that make millions of dollars that can't project which guy's going to be great in the NFL.
That's right.
You know, and so I think this kid's going to light it up in college.
Especially at that position, it's so difficult
right.
to forecast.
He has it.
Thank you.
He's got
thank
it.
You. Thank you. The only thing I don't understand is how he can throw a football without the laces.
The only thing I have against him is
try that
I didn't get
time.
A chance to
you're
coach
about
him.
The same size as him. Try that. Try grabbing a regulation-sized football with not hands that look like Shaquille's, but hands that are, you know, normal size hands.
Right.
It is not easy to throw a football with any kind of velocity, with any kind of spin ability, I
right.
should say, if that's a word, without the laces. But tremendous year, Trent Tompkins, as I mentioned. Cal High Sports, he's up for California High School Player of the Year, and it's not like he's on a list of those preseason where he's up. He's one of the award guys, and there's 86 linebackers in America that
right.
whittles down to one. No, the top five have now been announced, and he's one of them.
Right.
Congratulations. Well, we'll be back. We'll finish with high school basketball. Nick Anderson is in the house. You're listening to 940 ESPN, the Valley's local sports leader.
The Rise Show is sponsored by Bowman & Associates, Fashion Furniture, Van Buren Insurance, and Firehouse Subs.
Okay, we are close. You ready? All right. We are back live, Fashion Furniture. Thank you, Russ, for keeping us on point. This has been going extremely well. I don't like sitting in the position of Nick Papagni. He's not here today. He's out, as he likes to say, on location. There's a lot of high school basketball tournaments going on around, not just local, but around the state. And he's making that pilgrimage. How do you say that? He's traveling.
He's on location,
on
Matt.
On location.
By the way.
Yes.
I appreciate being on today. Nick Anderson back in the house.
Thank you, Nick Anderson, live here at Fashion Furniture. We want to thank Firehouse Subs. We want to thank all of the individual businesses and individual people that help support local high school athletics all throughout our valley, and you're one of them, Nick Anderson. Thank you for joining and filling in the chairs. We segue now into the world of high school basketball. I'm going to pull up in here in a minute the rankings as Pagmeter sees it around the valley, but it's always as fun this time of year. You've been through it with the daughter and the family, now your son, of enjoying the holidays, but there's a lot of basketball action.
Yeah, you know, I was just talking to Walter, who's in the state, who's always here. He's always good in attendance here, watching and listening to what you guys have to say here on the Rise Show. And that is your schedule. We're comparing schedules, and everybody's everywhere, right? And this time of year, it gets crazy. During the summer, it's crazy as well. The last few weeks have been tournaments, Matt. It's been fun to watch these teams, these local teams, get out and about and start playing games and seeing what they're all about. A lot of newness out there to several teams that Nick refers to on his website, pagmeter.com. And if you haven't been on that website, you need to get on there. He just updated all the rankings. But really what comes down to is several questions that I've had in the last couple of days, text messages and so on and so forth, is the divisions.
Yeah.
Is some of these teams playing, and this has been a continuous conversation that we've had, whether it be Nick and I or you, and just in several cases, whether it be here on the show or out and about watching Fresno State play. And why do some of these teams play in Division II or Division IV when they're, you know, going against Division I teams and playing pretty good against them and maybe losing by 5 or 6 or winning by 5 or 6 or more?
Yeah.
And it always comes down to, well, you know, our enrollment can change one day to the next. But with the amount of recruiting that goes on and is proven, once it's consistent to be a year in and year out type of thing to where, hey, these guys are actively out there recruiting people, right? You know, paying tuitions and getting kids into school and doing those kind of things. At some point, when's the CIF going to just automatically just push them into that division? Because there's obviously a history there that says and proves that they're able to go after the best kids in the area to get them to go to their school.
Well, yeah, it particularly cuts home. And, of course, those schools are not just limited to San Joaquin Memorial, but the Bakersfield Christian, the private schools in general.
All schools could do that, sure.
And other schools, public, that seem to have a pipeline of kids get found during club games, whether it's basketball, football. I agree. I think there's a simple solution, and I do believe, Nick, that the CIF and Jim Critchlow and the people that are in charge of overseeing this type of stuff, I think they're not only fully aware of it, I think they are carving out a plan, which is simply put, seed the divisions at the end or the beginning. I prefer the end of each season, that you could play a Division IV schedule. Let's take into account the San Joaquin Memorial girls basketball team, which is phenomenal. And they've got a collection of kids that came up in the early ranks of their program, but kids from Edison, girls, young ladies from Central. They've got a real good base now of basketball for the girls. We're not talking the boys yet because that's on a different level. But the girls now seem to have caught up. How are they playing Division IV? They play Clovis North, which is one of the top teams in the state, all divisions, and they took them to a very close contest and ended up losing. What are they going to do to their Division IV competition when it gets time for the road to Cellon Arena? They are going to destroy everyone. I think we can, one fell swoop, within reason of sitting at a table and getting all of the particulars ironed out, you have to see these football, baseball, basketball, big softball if need be, seed the tournament at the end of the year where everyone can sit at a table and obviously point out, well, if you think that team that just went 28-2 on the year is Division II and they beat several Division I programs on the way to that, they're Division I. And then hopefully have an arrangement with the state of California for playoffs of the state that even though you won the section Division I or Division II championship, you're allowed to be seated in a different division using the same criteria. Can they be matched up against, like for boys basketball or girls basketball, are they truly up to modern-day basketball standards? No. Then put them in the next division. Why can't we have a Division I champion and not have to worry that we're watering down the ability for the Central Section to have multiple participants in the state? If we took the best football teams in our section this last year, Central, Liberty, Bakersfield, Buchanan, and, of course, San Joaquin Memorial, and let's assume that San Joaquin Memorial does not win the Division I championship, Central beats them, I think the concern is, well, they're out of any chance of going to a state, and they've got a heck of a football team. If we can figure that part out, I agree without having to say 100%. I think it's not even a question. We need to start talking about alternative ways because these teams that go through the playoffs like a hot knife through butter and beat up on the Division III and Division IV programs, I'm getting tired of seeing it, quite frankly.
So what you're saying is that you feel like those teams that are the lower teams should be playing up against these bigger teams week in, week out.
I feel if anyone has a complaint, well, your enrollment is, 39,000 kids.
Right.
Well, how do we look on the field? How do we look on the court? We're clearly not that good. In competitive equity, the model, we the genie's out of the bottle. There's no more of this. People can call in and say, well, you got to build it. You got to just do it the old-fashioned way. Build it. Well, but my talent is this, and your talent are college guys. I can build it all I want. I can't compete in the highest level. Why am I in that division? And then you go the flip side is, why are teams that are clearly college-level ready players, club superstars, top names in the nation, why are they playing in a league other than the list we're going to go through, and you're going to answer each one of these teams, why is not San Joaquin Memorial going to go fight a Clovis West or whoever it might be in Division I at Sun Arena for the big show? If I'm playing, and I go to the games a lot, as a lot of you guys do, if I'm in attendance and I'm getting destroyed by a team that I know that eventually I'm going to have to see again in the playoffs, and I'm in Division III or II or IV, I'm asking, why is that team in my division? And that's, I think, what's happening.
Right. You mentioned San Joaquin Memorial, so that's the first team we'll talk about. You know, let's take a Clovis West, let's take a Clovis North. They play on the track, right? So the track play against Central, they play against Clovis North. Clovis West is there. Clovis East is there. Clovis is there as well. But those teams, you fight those teams. When you play against those teams every single week, two games a week compared to, I'm purely talking about just what's out there. And you go out there and you play against Sanger or somebody else or Madera or something in basketball, and you have the number one or number two kid in the nation, and that's your league, and you're playing in number two, and you don't have to go head-to-head against these other teams who have already beat you every week. By the time you get to the playoffs anyway, what kind of condition are you in, Matt? You know that from football. You have every week you're playing in the Pac-12 compared to maybe playing in a lesser division, but you guys meet up even though you're all Division I. Yeah. That team might be a little bit beat up, isn't it, by the time they get to those playoffs?
Well, there's that. That's that thing the PAG meter always uses the term battle-tested. They've played a schedule that is all of that. And I'm with you. There's probably, scientifically speaking, there's probably a level, if you played a few tough games and then for the next 16 games on your schedule are cupcakes, and then you've got to go to play against the real deal from South or from Oakland, or you go up against McClymans in football and you've been playing cupcakes and all of a sudden McClymans comes to town and you're like, I don't ever know. I've never seen a team that has that ability before. You're probably not going to be prepared for what's going to hit you in the face. That's a point. My point is simply the thing that I see stirring controversy by most everyone that is in this world of high school sports is they don't like seeing a team competitively that is way above them, that is so far beyond the stretch of the division they play in, but why are they allowed to play in that division? I go back. Division IV girls basketball, San Joaquin Memorial's girls basketball team will go through Division IV, if that's what I believe they're going to be playing in the section championship games. It won't even be close. I'm saying if you're that good, and I know it by the end of the year, then you're going to have a chance to go do what you do. I think every private, as Nick says, professional school should be seated as Division I because they have the ability, sort of Fresno Christian, they have the ability to actively pursue student-athletes in a different level than public schools can. Why are they playing against public schools with the constraints that we're under? We seem to be in public schools, we seem to be under a higher level of scrutiny than the schools in private. It's happening. And I'm all for the movement of kids. Let's just get the level of who they're playing against right. Let's not let them beat up. If there's a little rural school that has to go to battle against a Division IV superpower private professional, I thought the idea was it was competitive equity. That's what we're fighting for. And I think that is where most people are concerned. When is this going to stop? The only way to make it stop, or at least to make it at least feel a little bit on a better playing field, fair, put them all in Division I.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I do think that, you know, if the guys behind, as Nick calls them, the guys behind the scenes, which I might get into in a few minutes if I decide to or not.
Are you talking street agents?
I'm talking street agents, those kind of people that are out there. If they are involved with the program, and I'm going to tell you straight up, they are involved with programs. They are there. They make it obvious at basketball games when they show up and they're sitting where they're sitting and they're doing the things they're doing. If they're involved with that program, going back to what you said earlier, I don't have any problem with kids transferring. Did I consider transferring my kid? Sure I did. I'd be stupid if I didn't. If my kid's ability would get him into a program that would better him as far as getting him ready for college, if he desires to play in college, a system that better fits his work ethic, his athleticism, his abilities, absolutely. But if you have those guys behind the scenes that have the checkbooks that are sitting there offering money for you to have your kid go there, then yeah, sure, Division I for sure. Don't disagree at all with what they're doing to get kids to go to these schools. I think they've been able to get kids into programs that wouldn't get into those programs before, and if they're successful doing that, I think that's good. There's nothing wrong with that at all, Matt.
Well, we have a caller, Christian. What's your take?
Christian,
Nick. What's... Yes.
You know, I have a couple things. I'm not sure why we continue to beat to death the whole Division I, Division II issue. I mean, it's not something that I think you can decide. And, you know, we beat it every season. And I just had a couple comments and questions for you. I was at the Clovis West Memorial game.
Yes.
And I saw your behavior, and I was appalled. I can't believe an adult who's on a radio station and a father of a player would behave like you do. Can you explain that?
Explain what? Hey, Russ, let's move on to the next caller, please.
Well, Kristen, thank you so much for the call.
Want to admit how you were and how you treated Jalen Green and his family.
Well, Kristen, thank you so much for the call. We will address that. Thank you for calling. We'll talk about that. Thank you so much. I think what happens is there's a lot of things that happen in the heat of a contest from both sides. There's always two sides to every story. I'd rather not really like to comment on that type of stuff. I've seen and witnessed a lot of things in my career as not just an educator / coach / radio personality. I've seen that, but I'd rather not discuss any of that right now because I was not there. Thank you so much. Let's take a break. We'll be back. This is obviously a highly controversial topic, and it galvanizes the community, and that's what we're here for, to take on the tough things that go on in the world of high school sports. You're listening to 940 ESPN, the Valley's local sports leader.
The Rise Show is sponsored by Bowman & Associates, Fashion Furniture, Van Buren Insurance, and Firehouse Subs.
Well, welcome back. We've got about 5 minutes left. We're here at Fashion Furniture, the undisputed king of furniture and leader in the Valley for giving back. It's they do receive, but they give back more than they receive, and that's really what it's the spirit of being local and supporting our community is all about. Thank you, Fashion Furniture. Thank you, Firehouse Subs. Before I go any further, I'd like to turn it over to Nick Anderson, has a comment.
Yeah, so I'm just going to really put everything to bed here real fast for any callers that are out there that are kind of blindfolded by whatever they assume is going on. And I'm not going to get into anything, but everybody's got a kid and everybody defends their kid. And if anybody crosses certain lines, they're going to do what they need to do to defend their kid. So I've always learned a long time ago, and if you're too naive to understand this, then that's your issue. There's two sides to every story, okay? I can bring up some things that went on in the Clovis West gym a year ago, and that might help remind some people about some of the interesting tactics that some of the people from San Joaquin Memorial had that night. I won't get into any names because I don't believe in that today on this show, maybe a different show. There's a lot of things that led up to that game that I could bring up right now that would really, really damage a lot of people's minds right now. But I'm not going to do that. All I'm going to say is there's two sides to every story that go on out there. And, again, if you're too naive to understand or accept that, I can't help you.
Well, yeah, well, thank you for that. And, you know, I was not there, so I don't want to pretend to know, but I do know circumstances. I heard about things. I heard about certain things during that game. But I will tell you this, that in the world of football, there's a common thing we try to teach the young men, and that is don't be the guy that retaliates back, because it seems like the officials always seen the second guy. Now, I just watched a high school football game where I saw a football player look like the opponent was trying to hurt or damage or maim his opponent. But when the opponent who's getting the treatment in the scrum of the course of a football game retaliates back, like shove, push, and maybe even take a swing at somebody to get them off of potentially injuring them, the officials always seem to see that second one. So my point is, you can't jump to conclusions if something happens in the end, just as you can't see and jump to conclusions if something that happens. Two wrongs don't make a right. I understand that. But in the context of what you're probably talking about, Kristen, thank you for the call. You got to understand the whole scope of what goes on in the course of a competitive battle. It's over with. It's done. I appreciate the phone call. We certainly appreciate the level of play from all the schools that are out there. And saying that, we're coming to the end of our show, but I'd like to congratulate all of the champions. I'd like to congratulate all of the section title winners in the world of high school football. And that starts at Central, and it works its way all the way down to the great year. I really mean this. For the second year in a row, Strathmore, hats off to you getting to another championship. You fell a little short, Strathmore, against a loaded Hillmar team that really had no business being in Division VI. But that's the nature of the beast we're dealing with. I'm trying to battle for competitive equity now. I didn't used to feel that way. I used to feel like, come on, everyone has the same right to wake up in the morning and carve out their little niche in this great society of athletics that we deal in. However, the reality of the matter is, it's athletes, it's the players' game in the sports that I follow mostly, and if you don't have the athletes, you can train all you want, but unless someone, a higher power, comes in and keeps things equal, you're not going to have much of a shot. And I think that played out this year as good as anything. I saw a tremendous football team brought to you by a great group of leaders out at San Joaquin Memorial. Coach Anthony Gostin, what a great job you've done. I've been fighting hard that why are we in this valley of the Central Section, the only section that doesn't have a private school superpower? Well, maybe Bakersfield Christian, CVCs of the world, Garces, and, of course, San Joaquin Memorial and others. Maybe you're seeing the light, and I hope that is the case. All I ask for is let's keep it fair on the field, and let's get everyone assigned in the proper divisions. Thank you for listening.